Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Does anybody listening to this show want to move down the ladder of success? Can you honestly tell yourself and me with a straight face that you would like to move down the ladder of success, not up the ladder of success? I mean, be honest with yourself. I don't care if you claim to be a Marxist because you're an inheritance case or just a loser drug addict who figures that if you can bring it all down, girl, you'll get some of somebody else's spoils. But you'll wind up with nothing anyway. Because I'll tell you a little secret that you losers don't know. Even if communism were to come to America, God forbid, and I don't think it ever will, you'd still be on the bottom. And the very same people who are on the top now would survive and thrive in a communist system, and you'd still be on the bottom being stepped on because you're a dummy. That's all. So don't assume that if you can bring it down, you're going to rise up. You'll still be on the bottom. And the billionaires who are on the top will wind up on the top of the communist system as well because they're smarter than you and they work harder. It's a very big deal. Paul in New Orleans, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Doc, it's my first time calling you. I was calling because I have a friend who now lives in North Carolina. He's originally from Suffolk County, New York. And both of us have similar backgrounds. We were both in law enforcement for 31 years, and we were both Republicans. He even ran for office as a Republican after he retired. He recently switched over to Democrat, and he is completely sold by the Obama regime. And I mean, this is a very intelligent man, extremely.
What is he? What does he like about the Obama machine? What is it that's appealing to this gentleman?
It's everything. He honestly believes in his heart. He's told me before. He said, "I've never voted for a black man before," and he is black, by the way. And he told me, he says,
"You don't have to say anymore." You don't have to say anymore because you know and I know that a good portion of this election has to do with race. And the fact of the matter is that white liberals are guilty and half of them are voting for Obama because of the fact that he is 50% black. You know that and I know that.
Case, Doc, I really don't. He's not like that. He honestly believes that this man is going to make a difference and make change, and I don't.
Well, he will make change, but is all change necessarily positive?
No, all change is not necessarily possible.
Right. Some change can be a disaster. What if he says you're not allowed to own more than one house, and anyone who does is going to lose it? We're going to abscond it. We're going to take it by decree of the state. Is that good change or bad change?
I think he'd have a lot of problems if he made a statement like that.
Well, no, he could. Well, never mind the statement. What if he does it by executive order? I hereby decree that it's greedy, it increases carbon content, this and that, it takes housing away. We're taking away anyone's property, anyone who owns more than one house is going to have to turn it over to the local government so we can give it to a homeless or an illegal alien family. Obama could do that, couldn't he?
I guess he could do anything
well,
he wants.
Well, wouldn't, after all, his campaign is called change. Maybe that's the kind of change he has in mind. His campaign is also called hope. Maybe that's the hope he has for the illegal alien and the downtrodden, to take what's not his and give it to others. After all, it's been done in other countries before.
I mean, I feel like we're taxed enough. His tax program enough is enough to scare me. I mean, it's just too much.
That's correct. I feel that we're taxed beyond the burden of a donkey carrying a burden that's going to break his legs. Thank you for the call. My wonderful staff put down the glue bottle today. And they went and they dug up vintage footage of Barack Hussein Obama from a 1995 interview on a local Los Angeles show called Connie Martinson Talks Books. And some of this is quite telling. And I think that what you ought to do is listen to clips 16 and 17.
Right. And yeah. who is my pastor. And he is a wonderful man. And I think that's an example of he's a pastor of a large congregation in Chicago. And one of the interesting things that I discover in my journey to discover what my identity is and who my father is also discovering sort of my own faith, which is not necessarily a traditional faith. I don't come out of an institutionalized religious setting. You know, all the stories and songs of the church, you know, the hope that is embodied in the church, the sense of liberation that is embodied in the African, historically African American church, is really something that moves me deeply, and I think is probably the main pillar around which a lot of inner cities communities are going to be built. And Reverend Wright, my pastor, who I speak about in a chapter in the book, I think represents the best of what the black church has to offer.
Uh-huh. I thought he disavowed himself from Reverend Wright after people got a peek at what he means by liberation theology. Now, why am I playing a piece from 1995 where Obama goes on and on and on about liberation theology, that is black liberation theology? What exactly is black liberation theology, and how does this theology tie into his questions about the number of properties that John McCain owns? And who is Reverend Jeremiah Wright? For those of you who have forgotten, listen carefully. Listen to this.
Government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating our citizens as less than human.
Well, it is on record. Black liberation theology is a theology. It calls for certain things to be done to whites in order to liberate blacks. It's quite ugly. And black liberation theology is, frankly, Leninist at its core. It is Afro-Leninism, if you want to be specific about it. It's not Marxism, but most of us know who Karl Marx is today. And we know that he wasn't the fourth or fifth Marx brother. In fact, he did everything that was not funny on earth. He did some very, very horrible things, and over 100 million people died in the last century because of Marxism. 100 million people died because of this class warfare and race warfare that was instigated initially by Karl Marx and his minions in the old Russia. Now, if we have an intergenerational hatred for certain classes, which we do in this country, if we have a certain hatred for white people in this country amongst some other races, which is abjectly horrible and true, unfortunately, as you well know, racism is not limited to any particular race. Racism can exist in any race, and it does. There are whites who are racist towards other races, and there are blacks who are racist towards others. And I am terrified when I listen to the liberation theology talk of Reverend Jeremiah Wright, as I am disgusted to believe that you could be this stupid to not understand that Barack Hussein Obama is a stealth Leninist candidate. This is Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Here's another story. Gannett to cut 1,000 newspaper jobs. They'll have to build new cafes just when Starbucks is going out of business. Just when Starbucks should stay in business for all of the out-of-work intellectuals who are going to be sitting in cafes with laptops sending hate mail to talk radio shows who will still be here when they're gone. The coffee shops are closing. 1,000 newspaper people will be fired. Payroll. Instead of changing their policies and starting to appeal to the readers, again, they won't change course. They won't change editorial course. They keep the same anti-American, anti-military, anti-police, anti-family, pro-gay, pro-terrorist editorial policies, and they can't put two and two together. I could save any newspaper in this country in 90 days. I could save any newspaper in this country in 90 days if only they gave the people what they want. You know, they say, there used to be a statement, if you build a better mousetrap, people will beat a path to your door. You know, it's 100% true. I can name five people I know who built a better mousetrap who are very wealthy today. They came into a marketplace flooded, and they created a new product within that marketplace, and they became successful. I'm an example of it. The marketplace was filled with talkers when I got here. People said it could never be done. They said my accent was too New York. They said I could never overcome the liberal bias. Well, how did I do it? Because I gave the people what they want to hear, because I believe it down to the last molecule of DNA in my body. I'll give you another example. I complain, and too much, I complain far too much about food on this show. I admit it. In going through the stories from my autobiography and looking at what the proofreader sends back to me, and she's a young lady in another state who doesn't know me at all, I realize that I seem to spend a lot of time on food. I become my mother, in essence. For those of you who listen to the show get the joke. I don't mind if I became my mother. I loved it dearly. But there's a bigger point to it. I'm obsessed with food, with decent food. I don't mean great food. I'm not into fancy restaurants. I don't have the patience. I don't sit like a decadent slob over whether they tossed something with a certain this. Or that. I can't take it. I didn't grow up that way. I don't care whether it delights me. I care whether it's excellent quality and it's cooked right and it's fabulous. I don't need to see whether some chef with an earring and running open sores on his neck made something that he learned in a cooking school from some other moron. It doesn't do a thing for me. French Laundry they run to sit there like a putz, and they come, oh, I ate in there. Well, how was? Oh, you should see. It took me 2 years to get the reservation. Oh, and what did they get out of it that you can't get anywhere else? But you can't cook yourself nothing but hot air. It's part of the decadence of the society we're living in, this stupidity and foolishness. I ate in X restaurant. I am so fed up with restaurants, I went to the Subway sandwich shop today. I stood online like every other moron. Just stood with the morons. I became a moron. Loved it. No, I didn't love waiting. It was jammed. Why is it jammed? Why is the Subway sandwich store jammed? I saw they were running an ad that sandwich is $3.99 for an extra buck. It's a foot long. So I said, you know what? I can't take restaurants anymore. That was after the Chinese poisoning the other day. The lip sticking. When she looked in my face and tongue lashed me, screaming at me, how come you're saying it's grease? There's no grease on it. That's like the guy who gets caught in bed with another woman and his wife comes home and he looks at the wife and says, who are you going to believe, me or your own eyes? I'm sitting in the restaurant. The dish is coated with grease. And she says, no grease in the food. Why you say grease? Cook don't make grease. She knows me 20 years, tells me there's no grease. I took my finger, put it on this piece of chicken, and ran it across a napkin. It looked like a snail walked across the napkin. I threw the money down and said, here, I'm paying. You don't pass it, I pay. That was it. 20 years, goodbye. So I go to Subway sandwich store. I'll make it quick. Finally, I get on. It's my turn. The only part I couldn't take were the people with cell phones ahead of me. I wanted to break this. I did have anger management problems in there. I got to admit it. Three men I wanted to grab their wrists and take their cell phones and throw them in the mayonnaise. Not the man, the cell phone. And tell them, shut up and stop talking like a chick. Shut your mouth. Take the cell phone out of your hand. You sound like a stupid teenage girl. You sound like Lindsay Lohan. Can't you shut up? There are people online here. Shut up! I didn't say it. I had to control it. I did almost leave once. I did almost grab the phones twice. But I didn't. I finally managed to get to the counter. And you know what? The service was great. There's five people. Now, look at the value you get for $5. This is not an infomercial. They don't advertise on the show. I'm making a bigger point. Okay, foot-long tuna. So the first guy puts five scoops of tuna fish with mayonnaise on it. I know the mayonnaise is no good for me. Great. Now, just the vegetables alone that they put on were worth the $5. If you just want a vegetarian sandwich, it's worth it. I have half the sandwich sitting here. I can only eat a half a sandwich. Now, that means that two people can eat lunch for $5. A half a sandwich each. I'm a big eater. I can only eat a half of the sandwich. The other half is sitting here in the refrigerator. And I hope it will still be here in the year 2010 for someone who tries to steal it, as is very common in radio stations around the country. Everyone knows if you leave your food in the refrigerator, it will be stolen. At least it was in my experience in the radio. So I guess I wanted to see what it's like to be poor again. And I decided that if Obama wins and he taxes us to death and does what I'm sure he's going to do, which is reduce the wealth of the nation to ashes, you know what? I'll survive one way or the other. I know how to eat a Subway sandwich. I could eat in a fine restaurant. I prefer the sandwich to the restaurant. I have very fine cars, some very expensive. And my favorite car is my least expensive car. It happens to be a Chevrolet camper van conversion with a television in it and captain's chairs. And this weekend, you know what? I put aside the expensive cars. Because no matter how you try to say you don't know what you're driving, you do know what you're driving. And you are making a statement. The fact is they're great cars. They're wonderful cars. But they're a little too ostentatious and over the top, even though they're wonderful. And people look at them, and you have to put up with that. In the camper van, no one looks at you because they figure, who's the schmuck in the van there? And that's good. Room for the dogs, cooler full of food built in. I drove out to the beach, actually not to the beach, but to Highway 1 North. I haven't been there in 20 years, out on Highway 1 in Northern California to play like Nick's Cove and Eddie's this and like a little place. And, I got a fish thing and took it in the car. The dogs ate French fries. They went off their diet. It was a pleasure. Nobody bothers you. So if Obama turns it into a Marxist nation, I'll survive. I will learn how to play dominoes as they do in Cuba. I will probably have to give my van over to, because it's 2 years old and it's far too new for a white man in America. I'll probably have to turn my van over to a bureaucrat under Obama to be used for government work. And, so I'll buy an old Volkswagen like I once had, and I'll eat in Subway, and that'll be that. The book that I know you've all been waiting for, Psychological Nudity, is the title. And here we are, 75 stories from Michael's colorful life history are contained in this limited first edition printing. And you can go to michaelsavage.com, and you're going to see the picture of me holding Teddy, my dog. The classic stories I've told on the radio were translated for the written word. And I have to say translated for obvious reasons, because the spoken word and the written word are two different mediums. They're not the same. One Arm Frank, Love by the Sewer Plant, Dead Man's Pants, Savage's Childhood Diet, that's a prescription for a heart attack, Tippy the Dog Dies and is Thrown into a Garbage Truck, When Pasta Was Spaghetti, From Immigrant Son to Radio Stardom, and many more favorites are in this book, 75, by the way. Are there political stories? A few. The Medical Reason Why Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, Debunking Man-Induced Global Warming, Republicans Should Treat Voters Like Restaurant Customers, Psychological Nudity. It's a must for everyone who's read a Savage book. It's an original, and there it is, and I'll know how many you print.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
1-800, there's a fly in the studio. I like to kill it. I can't get to it. Don't you hate flies when they get... And I'm the kind of guy that lets flies out of a window, if I can. There's no windows here, no screens. I want to just kill it with a newspaper. In 2 minutes, you're going to hear me running after a fly. I hate flies. I hate them. They remind me of liberals. They always buzz around. They leave fecal matter everywhere. They supply nothing positive to the environment. And they're always buzzing. A bee I don't even mind as much as a fly. A bee I never get, it doesn't bother me because I can see a bee. It doesn't weave and bob like a fly. A fly has a certain agility that a bee doesn't. Bees leave you alone by and large. A fly looks to bother you just because it can. My father taught me a trick, may it rest in peace. You take an undershirt off your body. It's an old European trick, and you swing it overhead. You ever see the old men do that years ago? There's no old men around anymore. Where are the old men in this country? You never see them. When I grew up, there were old men around. There were old men, middle-aged men, young men. Today, everyone tries to look alike. With Viagra and hair transplants, it's like one continuum from age 15 till death. Everyone has dark hair, false teeth, and they can be sexually aroused till they go into the coffin. My day, you got old, and that was the end of it. They were old younger, though. The truth is, in my day, 40 was 60. 60 was 40. 80 was 60. I don't know how it happened. So, like a 60-year-old today is like a 40-year-old then, right? And in those days, they died young at 50, 55, a lot of them. It was like 75, 78. Well, they ate like they didn't know what they were doing. You ever take a look at their diets? Smoked all day, didn't exercise, didn't take a vitamin, no diet. Never heard of a garlic. They drank the wrong alcohol, so you know, you can kill any good genetic inheritance with that kind of situation. You could see I'm already, you know what I really want to do is have fun. I am having fun. Maybe it's too much fun. Maybe you want me to just do pure, you know, stuff for you. I don't know. I'm not in the mood. I have a friend I heard that I know from 30 years ago, listens to the show avidly in New York. Now, I haven't spoken to him in 20 years, but I heard he listens. And he actually knows that I really, when I told the story of the midget in the seedy hotel in Florida from 25 years ago, there really was a midget. And he really did rob all of my money and his money. And we had to call the police, and the police were in on the take. Remember that story? AC, if you're listening to this show, would you call and confirm that there was a midget in that Fleabag hotel in Miami back in the 60s? It really did exist. I was a naive kid from New York. We took the Greyhound bus down to Florida. We couldn't even afford a $69 air ticket. So it was like intercession, and we took the Greyhound, probably. Greyhound bus to Florida. I remember to this day, it went on. It was like a Midnight Cowboy. Right? It was like Midnight Cowboy. I mean, you know, like through Atlanta, there were like chicken bones in the aisle already. People were throwing food on it. You know, like eating chicken and throwing it on the floor. It got so filthy. Who would use a, you know, you really have to be a hero to use a like a Greyhound toilet. I would never. I'd rather bust inside than. Imagine going into a bus toilet in this day and age. Imagine what kind of needles are in there or whatever. I never, even as a kid, I wouldn't use a bus toilet. My God, the thought of it. The driver was like, I used to tell you there's a restroom in the back of the bus. Forget about it. It's like apartheid, man. Take that bus. It was the best fried chicken I ever tasted in my life was, you know, what do I know? Everything with me is food. So I came from New York, and my mother would try to make fried chicken. It was okay, but I didn't like the oil. It didn't taste good. So I figured I'm in Atlanta at the bus stop. I'll try in the cafeteria. The Greyhound cafeteria in Atlanta. Now I'm going to try the cuisine of the South in this place. What did I know? I was a kid from New York. I had no idea. I figured, all right, I'm in the South. I'm going to try Southern fried chicken. Where am I going to try it? The Greyhound bus terminal. It was excellent. It was unbelievable. Those days there was no KFC. They do a pretty good job, KFC. I've told you that. I haven't eaten it for a while. I got to try it again. I need to, like a hand. Maybe that's why I have a skin condition. Not enough grease. You know, I bet you I cut down on the fats too much. My skin became tight. Maybe if I had a high-fat diet. You know what? What if I went to a high-cholesterol diet for a few days? I guarantee. No, I went and got the fish oil today. The Norwegian, the nitrogen-infused $18 variety of cod liver oils from special hippie fish from Norway. Fish that are, they're all socialists. They're not racist. They're not homophobic fish. They danced in certain aquariums. And then they were harvested peacefully in their old age. And their livers were extracted gently by Dr. Death from his jail cell and infused with nitrogen. I actually feel better from it, the fish liver oil. But I'm not going to like it. I grew up on it. Thank God I had fish liver oil as a child. I got to tell you the truth. With the diet I ate, what she put into my mouth, you know how they force feed a goose to make pate? I was close to second in a human form. Well, because they came from poverty in the old world, so they had a little money. The first thing they did was feed you. They didn't intend to give you a heart attack at 12. But it was a cardiotoxic diet. There's no question about it. Ham and eggs for breakfast, meatloaf, a light lunch, meatloaf from the night before. And at night, you had a steak or pot roast polished off with an ice cream. Now, if you do that to an average human being today, they're dead in 3 years. Let's say you wanted to take Al-Qaeda members, and you say, well, here's your choice. We're either going to keep you in prison indefinitely with no charges for another 10 years, or we can subject you to Michael Savage's childhood diet for 3 months. And if you don't get a heart attack, you're free. You know what I'm saying? It's a choice. Now, the reason I think I'm still alive is twofold. A, I inherited on the female, the maternal side of the genetics. And B was the cod liver oil. Because despite the cardiotoxic diet, she gave me cod liver oil. She made me take drops. It was like in a dropper bottle in orange juice. I hated it. I hated the taste of it. It was so disgusting. To this day, it was like remembrances of disgusting things past. It was like Proust in the negative. Drip, drip, take it, it's good for you. I hated it. Take it or I'll kill you. And the scissors came out, or the big knife from the drawer. The Soprano scissors were looked at. Her eyes crossed, and I knew I better take that orange juice with the – it was less than getting a good wallop, you know, if I didn't take the juice. It was like the Kool-Aid. I mean, you look back on these things, as luck it didn't wind up in Guyana with Jim Jones. You know, I mean, take my Kool-Aid, man. Here's the drops in the Jello. You know, what am I talking about? Do some of you, are you able to follow free association when I get into the jazz thing of the show, or should I stop it? Would you like two dimensions, one dimension, or seven dimensions? You got to tell me what you want me to do here. On the line is a guy I have not spoken to in 10, 15 years, but he knows that the one-eyed midget from Miami story is 100% true. AC, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael.
I don't believe it. It's you. It really is you. I cannot believe it. I heard the other day that you are a listener.
A guy called me. He says, you better call your buddy Mike Savage. He says you should call him. Some bartender called me, the very same guy from 6-7 months ago. Mike, the big question is, do you remember how much money you put in the safe in Florida?
No! How much did I... Wait, I'm going to guess. In those days, $35, my entire life savings.
Bingo!
No. I made... Are you serious? Was it $35?
We put in the money in the morning. We came back 6 o'clock. He didn't know what you were talking about.
Was it not a midget in a shredded midget suit, like a bellhop?
23rd and Collins, man.
23rd and Collins. So is that South Beach today, Arnie?
Well, you know, South Beach, they want to say, is below 21st Street. So it's not officially South Beach, but it's South Miami.
Okay, but did you have bed bugs in your bed?
Of course.
I woke up in the morning, I thought I was hallucinating. There were bed bugs in the hotel. Now, today I'll bet you that property's worth a pretty penny, no doubt.
But, Mike, you don't remember. You went crazy with the guy. All of a sudden, he immediately found it, or he forgot. He found it.
Wait a minute. Let's slow down. We put the money in, all our money, in the safety deposit box in this flea-bag hotel. We come back. I don't know about no money. I went crazy. Didn't we call for the police?
We threatened to call for the police. The midget eyes started rolling around in his head, the one eye. And all of a sudden, he remembered it was in the back safe.
Oh, I pulled a loud yelling scene in the lobby, right?
Went nuts.
I gave him the command voice and the insanity, and the midget suddenly saw reality. He vaguely remembered the money. Oh, I switched to the other box or something, right? That's right. It reappeared before the police arrived.
He appeared. All of a sudden, he apologized profusely. What can I say? It was incredible. It was
See, but people think I made up the midget in the Miami hotel story. What else? Now, is it not true, and I won't get too personal, didn't you have an uncle who owned a hotel down there, a rich guy?
You got some memory.
Wait, yes or no? Didn't he own a hotel?
Mickey Hayes,
Oh, my. But wait, but didn't he also have a slight habit of stealing the sugar out of other hotels? I remember he owned a hotel worth millions in those days, even in those days millions, which could be, you know, God knows what today. But he had a habit, the sugar and the butter he took from other hotels.
And the plastic spoons.
That's right. You never knew when you might need them because he could be thrown out of Florida any minute. So without getting into detail, I hear you're happily remarried and everything now. I won't get into details.
Michael, I have been wanting to call you for the longest time. I just never, I don't know what to say, but now I get phone calls, call you
up. Now the next time you're on the West Coast, it's dinner on me. We're going to have a good laugh. Because as I get older, I realize, I mean, time, tick-tock. You know, you can't invent old friends, my friend AC.
And you know this, you know, are we on the radio now? Because I don't even know, but...
I hope so. If we're not, I'm out of business.
Let me tell you this. There's one thing, I mean, I go over my Michael, the times we had together. Why can't I get Hakka cuisine here on the East Coast?
Isn't that amazing? From the years you lived in San Francisco?
You took me on Broadway to the Hakka cuisine. There was also...
Oh, yeah, no, you cannot get Hakka in New York with that Chinese community? You never heard of a Hakka?
All I know is you turned me on to the greatest Chinese food in the world, Hakka.
Well, San Francisco has the best Chinese food in the world. There's no question about it. And Hakka cuisine is at the top of the list. It's in the clay pots and this and that. You know, before you go, I remember one of the best memories of my life in San Francisco was when you lived here before the horrible, and I can't bring it up, let's forget it with the taxi thing, right?
Michael, there's not enough time that we have now. You're on your show.
But I was there for you, wasn't I? Was I not there for you?
You showed up to see that I was still alive. I had the apartment on 17th Avenue. I couldn't even go to the bathroom. My hands were all in casts.
Oh, I'd like to. That is that where? Let's not go into that person. I'm sure he's a board of supervisor today. Do you remember the dinner your former paramour threw in that wonderful apartment? A long Sicilian dinner. She had. Remember, she was from Sicily, right? A lovely girl. And she did an Italian meal. Remember I asked for like a Godfather meal and she did it with like 20 people at a long table. Remember that meal?
Fabulous.
See that? I remember all the good stuff. It's all simple things, AC. Let me tell you.
There's so much. And they asked me what music I wanted to play. And I was all of a sudden, I nutted up. You don't play any Latin music for them on the air, do you? They wouldn't understand.
Oh, yes, I do. Once in a while from the private collection. Our old friend Artie sends me CDs I play. Play Para Vivir while AC is on. Let's see if it makes him go. It means to life, and to you I say to life. God bless you. Thank God you're still with us on this planet.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I wrote the best-selling book, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, as you know, because it's 100% true. That's why it resonated with the American, the intelligent America. They understood immediately that the zeitgeist of the title said it all. It said it all because the only explanation for liberalism is madness. In some cases, mild. In some cases, severe. How could they think these things unless they're crazy? Sometimes they're not totally crazy, just partly crazy, you know, a piece crazy. But they're crazy for the things that they do. But I once knew 20 years ago, I knew a medical doctor who was an early pioneer in acupuncture in America. He was in Sausalito on a houseboat. I forget his name. He was the nicest guy in the world. But he told me that according to acupuncture theory, and he was a good one. He had studied in China. He was first a legitimate, straightforward American medical doctor type of guy. And in the 70s, he went to China, and he came back, and he incorporated acupuncture, and it worked so well that he gave up regular medicine and was only an acupuncturist, blah, blah, blah. But he said, according to acupuncture theory, there's a thing called a sorter, S-O-R-T-E-R, that goes out in some people. And I said, what does that mean? It's the ability to sort out what is relatively important and what is relatively unimportant in a person's life. In other words, they distort. Their sorter is out. So, in other words, they would hit certain pressure points to make the sorter work again so that people could get things in order in their life. That's so typical of people who are extremist in their, unable to sort things out in their mind as to what's important, what's unimportant, whether it be in their own life or in the life of the society or their place in society, what's important. Their sorters are off. That's a form of illness. Whether you want to call it a mental illness is another story. But I will tell you that a lot of the statements that come out of the liberal orthodoxy is an example of this distortion. Maybe they need a good needle in the right place.
Savage.
I read an interesting story in a boating magazine on the way home that has a lot to teach us. It's about a man who owned a mega yacht, like 134 feet. This is a mega yacht, a certifiable mega yacht. One of the, you know, the great, beautiful boats of the world. So the crew was delivering it from Fort Lauderdale to somewhere in the Caribbean. I don't know where. What happened was, is a lot of these mega yachts have been designed recently to have stern doors, you know, in the back of the boat. For those of you who don't have boats, these are big boats. And the back lifts up and out come, various water toys, you know, like speed boats. Ski-doos, some of them even have submarines that come out of the back. The problem is some of these doors are not waterproof, or watertight, rather. They're waterproof. You know, like the raincoat you bought, let's say, at Brooks Brothers when you were 18, and the man said to you it's water resistant, and you went out in the rain and got soaked down to your shirt, and you came back in fuming, and you said, but you said the raincoat was waterproof, and he looked at you and said, no, I said it's water resistant. Now, I had that happen to me when I was 17. So I learned the difference between water-resistant and waterproof very young as a result of a raincoat I bought in Brooks Brothers when I was trying to be, a business type in New York. Well, looked like a business type when I was a humble welfare worker. I worked in the welfare department then as a teacher. But the fact of the matter is, so the crew goes out in this big mega yacht, which you think is unsinkable, and this boat sinks. The doors pop open. The seas break through the back. The water comes rushing in. Next, the waterproof barrier in the boat, the watertight compartment, breaks, or the crew had left the door open. The boat floods. Now, it doesn't go down right away, but there's so much water sloshing around inside the boat, going up the three stories of staircases. It's destroying the silk wallpaper. It's destroying the silk sheets. It's destroying the art on the walls. And the boat is now suddenly unstable. Then the pumps fail on the boat at the same time. It's like the perfect storm all over again. Well, the moral of the story is that none of us are as secure as we think we are. And although we think that, let's say many people who are wealthy in particular, think that they're immune from any kind of occurrence like this, that it can't happen to them. They're above it all. They think that they're above it all and it could never affect them. The fact of the matter is there's a lesson in this story for all of us. And that boat is very much like America as far as I'm concerned. That ship I am describing to you with doors on the rear that opened for the toys to come out and instead became flooded with seas that entered are very much like this country. And I'm terrified that the captain that we have, the crew that we have running the good ship America, are about as incompetent as the crew that ran that ship. And eventually they had to be lifted off that ship by helicopter. And the helicopter, the Coast Guard helicopter crew, by the way, were real heroes. You get the picture. You know, a ship, no matter how good it is only as good as its captain and its crew. Likewise, a nation. A nation is only ultimately, no matter how great that nation is, it is only as good as its president and its leadership.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show. Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
It's an interesting world we're all living in so many ways. When you look at the hybrid cars, you know, you start to think, look, I have high-powered cars, a lot of them, from my old, from phenomenal, you know, 7-liter, 65 caddy convertible. That thing's a storm. Old technology, it stinks, but it's fast as a rocket for a big, fat car. Then I got a big, fat Mercedes, a 600S, a 12-cylinder. The thing is a rocket ship, 0 to 60 in 4.5. I have another, I'm not going to hide it. I have a Ferrari. The thing is a rocket. I never drive it. It's got 1,600 miles on it after 2 years. Are Dennis Kucinich speaking? No, wait, let me finish this better than that loser. I don't know how he got up there, that homeless moron. Let me hear a minute of him.
Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Turn it off. I heard enough already with him, that lunatic hysteric. He sounds like Frito. Wait, let me hear it again.
Hot war with Iran.
Now we Why does he sound like Frito in The Godfather? Play Frito. Play Frito if you can find it.
Say Frito wants to do this. Say Frito wants to do that. Let Frito take care of some Mickey Mouse nightclub somewhere. I can handle things. I'm smart. Not like everybody says.
I swear to you.
World records for violation.
Did I not pick up on a gestalt here? a verbal gestalt that Dennis Kucinich is the Frito of the Democrat convention.
Inheritance and hollow out the economy. We cannot afford another Republican administration.
Send Fredo off to do this.
These
insurance
companies took over health care. Wake up, America.
Send Fredo off to do this. Send Fredo off to do that.
Wake up, America.
Let Fredo take care of some Mickey Mouse nightclub somewhere.
America, they want your Social Security. Wake up, America. Multinational corporations took over our trade policies. Factories are closing.
I can handle things. I'm smart.
Wake up, America. We went into Iraq. War against Iran will mean $10 a gallon gasoline. The oil administration, they want to drill more into your wallet. Wake up, America. Contract.
All right. Shut up. Get him out of here, boo. Give him the hook. They want to drill more into your wallet, you putz. The reason we want to drill more is to reduce the cost of oil, Schmendrick. What up? This is an idiot. Lowest. I don't know how they let this plankton onto the stage with the whales there. You know, what a moron this guy is. He makes me. But you got to admit that the mix between him and Dennis Kucinich and Frito was really good. It was one of the fine moments of radio. I really enjoyed that. Is he still talking? Let me hear more.
Well, the cost of food, gasoline, and electricity skyrocketed.
Ah, shut up. You don't look like
now
you're starving to me.
Get
up. Get him off this. Yeah, take it. Tell your story, Walken Johnson. Get out of here. Let me hear. Just one more second. I can't resist. It's like drawing in the air on a tooth, like a filling that fell out. Let me hear one more.
I can handle things. I'm smart.
No, Dennis Kucinich. Dennis.
The insurance companies.
All right. He's anti-corporate. Yeah. How many corporations support this bum? I don't understand it because he has a very good-looking wife. That's the part that bothers me. What is it about women that they're attracted to weasels like him? I could never understand this. The guy is ugly. He's a psychopath. He's a left-winger. How he got him, I'll never understand this. But then, look, a lot of women look good, and inside they're insecure children. So what are you going to do? Maybe he bought. Let's not go there. Let me not fantasize. I'm not interested in his sex life. Before I was so rudely interrupted by my own machinations here with Dennis Kucinich and Frito Corleone, I was saying that I have cars with big engines. Okay, it's my business. I pay for the gas. You don't. Okay, so don't lecture me about what I should be doing. And here's what I'm getting at. You idiots with these Toyota hybrids, at first you say, you know what? Hey, what's wrong with, you know, cutting down on emissions? No one likes emissions. It turns out that the batteries for these cars cannot be recycled in any way. They're going to wind up polluting the earth for as long as maybe 1,000 years. There's no way to recycle them right now. They have to create whole new dumps for the nickel batteries or whatever they're using in these Toyota hybrids. It came out in Australia that they cannot get rid of them. Did you hear what I just said to you? Can you believe this? Can you believe this story, what I just told to you? So the next time you see one of the self-righteous people driving around in a hybrid, sneering at you and cutting you off in the right lane, which they all do. I don't know what it is. Like, guys who are short have to start bar fights and let their big friends finish them. I don't understand it, but everyone with a hybrid is speedy. They're all in zippy cars. You know who the zippy cars are? The ugliest car on the road is this Honda Box. It is the ugliest car ever made. It looks like a clown car. I don't need to wait for the circus to arrive. Every time I see a guy in one of those cars with an Obama sticker, I start to laugh hysterically. But they're always driving faster than anyone on the road from the right lane to prove to you that although they're little, they can drive as fast as you. And there's only one – I mean, if you're competitive as I am, it gets to you after a while. So I usually step on the gas and blow them away, and they get so mad if you're faster than them. They're driving every lane, cutting everyone off. You step on the gas and zoom away from them, and they can't quite get in front of you in the left lane, and they go crazy here in the San Francisco area. They put their lights on. That's the liberal thing. They put the lights on, and they shake their head from left to right. No, 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 like they're affecting you. What's the lights on? I almost got killed when I did that in New York a long time ago. Did I ever tell you that story? It's not in the book. They don't understand reality, liberals. I'm not a violent man. I just laugh at them. But there are people who are crazy. They will kill you for simply cutting them off. They'll kill you just for flashing your lights at them. This is an amazing story that I'm glad isn't in the book. I had moved back to New York in the mid-'80s. I had to leave California. So I had forgotten the mores of a dangerous city. The naked city can strip you bare fast. San Francisco may be violent, but it's in certain pockets of the city. New York can be dangerous anywhere at any time and can come at you like a bee out of nowhere. One night, not late, 9 o'clock, I'm on the service road of the Grand Central Parkway. I don't know what it was, and the guy stops in front of me for no reason. It was a dark portion of the service road somewhere in Queens. He was going slow, or he stopped. I flashed my lights. I didn't scream. I didn't yell. I didn't honk. I gave it one flash, like, what are you doing? Then I go to pass him on the right, and he blocks the car, and the windows go down, and two of the most murderous faces I've ever seen in my life looked at me, and they didn't say one word. They were deciding whether to kill me. And it looked like, you know, looking back on it, a guardian angel saved my life because I had my kid in the car, and frankly, he was young. And they probably figured it isn't worth it, not that they had any compassion for the kid, but they figured that it looked to me like they just came from a murder, a butcher job somewhere. And I swear to God, I know afterwards, and it's happened to me a few times in my life where I've made an error. How did I know? What, a flash of a light is going to get you killed? And I learned something from that. The mere gesture in a car can get you killed. But the people in Marin County don't know that. The people in San Francisco don't know that. It's the, hey, hey, how, up yours, you're going to go. That's the crowd. Everyone is everyone they can give the finger to because they've never been pushed in their life, let alone punched in the nose. No one's ever pushed them back. Now, this goes to their worldview. The liberal does not understand, never mind the highway, they don't understand the world. They don't understand what Iran is. They don't understand what Russia is. They don't understand what China is. They don't understand that the freedom they have has come to them from rivers of blood of American men who have bled to death all over the world so that they can go with the middle finger to you from the right lane. They don't understand that it was the infantrymen in World War II who froze in a foxhole in the Herson Forest, that it was the bomber pilot over Schweinfurt whose plane was shot down after he dropped bombs on a ball bearing plant, that has given them the freedom to give you the middle finger.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Now, what's important to me today is not so much this, but something else. And I think many of you know what it is. And that is my book. I have worked on this book all of my life. And I've come up with it. I've killed myself to get it up on my website today. I know the audience is rather small. And I also know that the audience is rather small on a Monday to begin with. But Michael Savage has finally written the book that I know you've all been waiting for. Psychological Nudity is the title. And it's a shockingly great title because I've opened my show with that, Psychological Nudity, for 15 years. And here we are, 75 stories from Michael's colorful life history are contained in this limited first edition printing. You'll have to let me boast about it for a few minutes if you don't mind. If you don't mind, I have to talk about it. I have worked on this. I have worked on it. I've worked on it. You've asked for it. And here it is. And you can go to michaelsavage.com and you're going to see the picture of me holding Teddy, my dog. And I can guarantee you that Teddy will get a movie deal before I will. That I can guarantee you. If he is not the cutest dog in the entire world, Teddy, you're great. Teddy, you're great. And every dollar that we make on this book, I'm going to devote to dogs somehow. Because I don't need it. We're going to do something for dogs somewhere down the line. I don't know what we're going to do with it, but let me tell you something. The title alone says it all. Now, what you don't see, and this is killing me. We didn't get it posted yet. I hope to have this surprise for you. The back cover is a real surprise. There's another picture on the back cover, which I'm not going to tell you about. I hope Art can get it up today. But you're going to see something no one has ever done in print before, ever. in the history of books, nobody has done what Michael Savage did on the back cover of this book. And one last note, please, and I'll be talking about it over and over again this week. I have not yet gone to the printer with the first print run because I really don't know how many of them to print. I don't know how many of you want the book. So I'm asking you, if you're even thinking of getting it, to order it this week, because I'm going to the printer Tuesday with my order. September 1st, whenever that is. When is that, Bay? Well, if that's this week? Okay, Monday. Everyone's off being in the print run. And if you want your copy, you've got to let me know now, and I'll tell you why. Because it takes 5 weeks to print the book and then to ship it and whatnot. You're not going to get it till the end of October, early. That's it for the holiday season. So if you're going to want one, please. You're not going to be billed until the book is shipped, by the way. MichaelSavage.com has the whole story on it. But let me just read you some of the stories in my book, please. The classic stories I've told on the radio were translated for the written word. And I have to say translated for obvious reasons, because the spoken word and the written word are two different mediums. They're not the same. One Arm Frank, Love by the Sewer Plant, Dead Man's Pants, Savage's Childhood Diet, that's a prescription for a heart attack, Tippy the Dog Dies and is Thrown into a Garbage Truck, When Pasta Was Spaghetti, My Silent Brother, The Electric Blue Saddle Stitched Pants, Fat Al's Tuna, Nutty Friend Had Crazy Mother, Coney Island Wax Figures, Dead Man's Pants, Tippy the Mad Dog, Woodchuck Bill, Plus, Louie and His Crazed Monkey, Half Man, Half Woman, The Yawn Man Gets Brain Cancer, The Nympho Story, Fiji Islands in 1969, Happy and Sad Cufflinks, First Autopsy, Working on a Cruise Line, Talking to a Bum About God, Love by the Sewer Plant, Mama Savage Calls, From Immigrant Son to Radio Stardom, and many more favorites are in this book, 75, by the way. Are there political stories? A few. Many more favorites, including some insightful political commentaries that I've given to you on this radio show, including this great one, is in the book, What If John McCain's Middle Name Was Jesus? Now, I think that's a great story because, as you well know, Barack Obama has a middle name, and it's Hussein. And they said, how dare you even mention Hussein? Why is Hussein an important name? Why do you have to mention Hussein Obama? Well, the answer is because if John McCain, if his name was John Jesus McCain, I can guarantee you the Democrats today would be screaming bloody murder, saying, what does Jesus signify? That's why we ask, what does Hussein signify? The medical reason why liberalism is a mental disorder. Debunking man-induced global warming. Republicans should treat voters like restaurant customers. Savage for president. It's a must for everyone who's read a Savage book. Any of you who've ever bought any of my four bestsellers, you're going to want this one. It's an original. I am publishing it myself. The pub date is October 15th. Kindly go to michaelsavage.com, review the cover, and click.
Savage.
And on top of it all, a one-arm Frank level Hal. Did I ever tell you about one-arm Frank? You haven't heard the one-arm Frank story. Do I have a moment? My father, I told you, was an antique dealer. May he rest in peace. So we would come home from... Well, he had a guy who came in with one arm. I don't know how the guy became one arm. But he, you know, you didn't know a lot of people with one arms in those days. Even today, they have a... I guess you don't know one arm people today. They have a fake arm. But he had the arm sewed up, you know, in a suit. So, all right, so you accept him. His name, though, was One Arm Frank. Because nobody hid reality in those days. Today it's like, oh, yeah, he's normal. He's just like a... In those days, it was one-arm Frank. Today it's like, oh, he's better than normal, man. He's special. Like, if you have one arm, you're better than a guy with two arms today. You know what I mean? If you have no arms and no legs, you're Superman in the politically correct world of today. But in those days, if you were missing an arm, that's what you would name, One-Arm Frank. Whatever your anomaly was, that was your name. It made it easier for the average person to remember everybody. So One-Arm Frank was a very sweet guy, but a breath on him. Now, I want to tell you, there are bad breaths, then there are very bad breaths, then there are medicinal problems. This had to be solved with a medicine that hasn't been invented yet. It was wintertime, and once in a while, my old man would drive One-Arm Frank home, and I'd get stuck in the back, and One-Arm Frank would get shotgun. Now, I want to tell you something. It could be -4 degrees in New York. You had to ride with all the windows open. Did you ever have a person like this, Greg? I'm serious, where it's medicinally like a medical problem, where he says anything and the car fills with a noxious fume
where you don't know what to do. You know, are we going past the Trun's Meat Factory? No, we're not in Williamsburg. Did we run over a small furry creature that got caught in the muffler and shot up through the floorboard? Did I step on something on the way? No, it's Frank talking.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. Listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know what? I'm going to open it up to anything. Give me some rock and roll. Let's do do you have The Great Pretender by The Platters? I heard it the other night. I really loved it over the weekend. I was in a very sad, depressed mood. I was alone. I go into these moods in and out. I admit it. I'm not ashamed of it. You know, it gets back to something. You got it. Look at that. Bouncing Prozac pill. Follow it along the bottom of the radio speaker. The bouncing Prozac pill.
I pretend too much. I'm lonely, but no one can tell. Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
Great song, actually, to be honest with you. Anyway, turn it on. It's my own thing. But so I'm getting into one of those moods, and I decide to have a couple of drinks by myself, which I did. And I had a couple of drinks, and the mood went away. But the thing I'm telling you is that life sucks. And once you accept that life sucks, it becomes easier to deal with. And that's why there's so much weakness in America, is because we're deluded into thinking that we're supposed to be happy and everyone else is happy and you're the only one who's feeling lonely. Or you're feeling life's burdens and no one else, and you look at the ads every minute, there's a ha-ha and a ho-ho and a hee and it. And the media continuously drives this concept that everyone else is having a great time except you. You're the only one having a miserable time. But in fact, this is what life is. And a lot of it is the fact that you were raised, if you're a person under 45, you were probably raised in a Spockian, nightmare where you were told that life is pleasant, life is easy, life is good. And maybe it is for you. Maybe you're a lucky person. You'd be the exception. You're not the norm. For most people, life is a grind. Life is a bore and life is difficult and life sucks. And there is no happiness. Happiness is fleeting. Happiness is transient. Happiness exists here and there. You have moments of happiness, whatever they may be for you. I don't know what they are. The birth of a child. The wedding of your daughter. I don't know what the hell. Walking your child, seeing the kid in the graduation hat. Whatever it is, I don't know, getting a promotion, seeing a book published. There are small moments, but basically it's a flat line of difficulty for the average person. Then you get sick and you suffer, and then you die a horrible death, usually alone in a home or in a hospital. And once you accept that that's the terms, that's the deal, that's it. It isn't that bad when you realize what people have suffered through the ages. So what you have to do is toughen yourself up, and you have to learn that life is not the delusion that if only there was another elected official out there who gave you free medical care, if he gave you prescription drugs, you'd be happy if you had prescription drugs. If only you had more prescription drugs, more crutches from the government, then you'd be happy. And you got to pray a lot. I mean, you got to go back to the holy books that your fathers or grandfathers, you're only probably, no matter who you are, let's say your hair is green and you got 18 nose rings and nipple rings and this ring and that ring, and you're running around in L.A. twinkling around thinking you're free, you're free, you're free. I don't hear freedom. I hear slavery. The more I hear those rings rattle, the more I know you're a slave. You're probably only two generations at most away from a very religious person in your family. Max, two generations, the most. Someone who actually believed in the word of God and went to church or synagogue. And you may find that is the way to go. There are what I found is that there's no single way to go in my own case. It doesn't work for you. It works for me. You got to do an awful lot of different things. Exercise, vitamins, eat right, know how to control yourself, know where to get your pleasure, know where not to get your pleasure. You got to pray. You got to believe in God. You know, everything is part of the whole. There's no single path for the modern man. There's no simple solution for it all. In other words, you just got to deal with life's burdens. Or else, what are you going to do? What are you going to kill yourself? So the government keeps promising you stuff they can't deliver in order to hypnotize you like Obama. All they would do was hypnotizing the schmuck out there that George Bush is mean, the Republicans are evil, and if they're elected, they're going to make you happier because they're going to give you free prescription drugs. Well, okay, buddy, you believe in Santa Claus, you can believe in Obama. So it is related to politics, what I'm saying to you. We're living in a delusional nation. Everything is fantasy. We all watch too much TV, too many movies. I myself do. I admit it. I don't know how much of what how many movies I've watched. If I could redo one thing in my life, I would never have watched movies or television in my life. I can't imagine life without it. I've been brainwashed since I'm a child. Remember, I'm born in the television age. Would you believe I go back to a time before there was television? Can you believe that? That's amazing. But I remember living in a time when there was no television in a house. There was only a radio. And we would sit around and listen to the radio. I'd lie on my father's lap. He'd smoke Philip Morris, God rest his soul. And we'd listen to shows like The Green Hornet and whatever. And you had to use your imagination. When you listen to radio as a child, this is why I'm so talented in radio. Because I grew up on radio. Don't you understand there's a difference? It's not that there were people who are younger than me who can't do radio. But my father used to explain to me that radio was actually a better medium. He used to say to me, I like radio better. I said, why, Dad? Because you have to. He used to say to me, because you have to use your imagination. I said, oh, okay. So he taught me how to use my imagination. Not that it was too hard for me to do so. There was so much tragedy in my youth that I learned to live in a fantasy world. I created my own fantasy world in order to overcome the tragedy of my childhood. But that's good. That is good. That's what creative people do. They create with their sadness. They create with their misery. They don't succumb to a drug. Don't you understand that? That when you suppress sadness, when you suppress loneliness, when you keep suppressing these things with drugs, you're killing yourself. It's a small death. It's a petite mort. You know what I'm saying? Le petite mort. But it's not even the pleasure of the petite mort. Play the Green Hornet for the audience. They don't know what I'm talking about.
He hunts the biggest of all games. Public enemies who try to destroy our America.
I turn it off. This is horrible. Bad radio. What is this now? 1-800-449. Jesse Jackson warns of harm to parties. Look who's talking. A real halo. This just came out on Judge. Jesse Jackson warns of irreparable harm to party. Here's a guy who wrecked the Democrat Party with his racial divide and hatred and his bunko, him and the other one. Him and the other one with the white collar. No one knows where he went to divinity school. Jesse Hi Jackson. The Democrats. He's advising them how to run the party now. Oh, great. 1-800-499-8255. MichaelSavage.com. What do you want to talk about? Many of you don't know how to raise children. You need me to tell you. You do. Many of you don't have a parent. You don't have a father. You don't have an uncle. You have no one to rely upon. And you don't know what to do. You don't know how to turn. And I'm telling you that this coddling stuff, I'm not saying hit your kid. Don't get me wrong. I'm not giving you that advice. But you got to teach your child reality. And you got to teach your child that life is not a bowl of cherries. You got to teach them that life needs to be hard, that life is hard. Life is going to leave you alone a lot. You got to teach your child to be alone a lot. Did you know that? You know, you got to teach your child how to be alone a lot in order to be alone a lot, because he's going to be alone a lot when he grows up. Did you hear what I just said? We don't live in a commune. He's not going to live in ding-dong school the rest of his life. Teach your child how to be alone. I remember when my first child was a baby. I didn't know how to raise an infant, so I turned to various cultures for advice. I mean, I was an anthropologist at the time, and I was immersing myself in Native American, everything I could read on tribal lore. I read South Pacific, this and that. But one of the things I read was how the Native Americans, some of the tribes, raised their young sons to be tough, basically. And when the young baby, if it was a boy baby, started to cry, they'd wrap the baby in a papoose and then put the papoose out on a tree outside the teepee until the baby screamed and cried till he didn't scream anymore. I read that. Now, of course, today the Child Protective Service is the ones that will not go to the home of a talk show host who imagined doing his own daughter and the son's friends, allegedly. The same CPS run by the hippopotamuses in Child Protective Services, the mean-faced, clipped-haired hippos who run these agencies, would, of course, arrest a Native American who did that today. But it was a pretty good idea. In other words, a child will cry and cry and cry till there's no crying left. And guess what? Then the child becomes hardened. He's harder as a result. Oh, he doesn't feel as much as you want him to feel. Oh, he doesn't know. He doesn't feel like you want him to feel. You want him to be a feeling man? You want him to be a metrosexual son? Maybe you don't want him to be a metrosexual son. Maybe if you raised your son a little bit more like that, and then you watched a few shows on the Spetsnaz training for the Russian Special Forces and see how tough these guys are compared to even our toughest of tough. In other words, what they do in the Special Forces in Russia to train their men, you couldn't do here in America. They consider what the Russian Special Forces do to each other makes waterboarding look like a picnic on Sunday. But don't tell that to Obama. What they do to each other in training, they punch each other in the nose. There are no teeth guards. There are no nose guards. They beat each other up. And if the guy can't handle it, they throw him out of the Russian Special Forces. Here, right away, Obama would break down the Marine training or the Special Forces training, saying it's a little too rough, okay? Now you understand where we're at? When we have Marines who actually are trained to hunt and kill and go out and hunt and kill like they've been trained to do as kids, and that's why they're tough enough to go into the U.S. Marines, and they do the job they were trained to do, what happens? Some puke wearing a uniform who's really a lawyer who's too stupid to get a job in civilian life goes after the kid who does his job. That's where I'm concerned about my country. I'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
To start this Thursday on the Savage Nation, the Great Duke Ellington. Then we're going to go to something else and something else and something else.
Heart and soul.
It is the Savage Nation. Combination doo-wop, jazz. I'm in a 50s mood. You know, I really hate 2007. Why must I love every year? Is that like a liberal thing that all years are equal? Moral equivalence between years? 2007 has been a rotten year for me. What's the worst year of my life so far? Never thought about it that way. What's the best year of my life so far? Give me a little Mel Allen. It's a high fly ball. I want to go back to my childhood. That's it. I want to live in the past.
Going, it is gone.
Oh, thank you, Mel. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Walking around with a transistor radio, crew cut haircut, a little kid with corduroy pants, innocent, no sexual feelings, nothing. All that was on my head was baseball. But now it's a different story. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? There's so many problems. Who asked for this? I should disappear into the ethers. White Hat, West Palm Beach, Jupiter. Maybe I should go to Jupiter instead of Jupiter, Florida. You know that most of America walks around like they don't even know what's going on. They don't know where Iran is. If you said Iran, Ahmadinejad, Hitler, they wouldn't know if you were talking about a baseball team or if you were talking about science fiction. They go to malls. All they want to do is jingle bells. Can you blame them? It's the way most people are, actually, when you think about it. So why can't I be like most people? Answer, because I never was. I've always had the weight of the world on my shoulders. Even when I was a little kid in the Bronx, they said, that one has the weight of his shoulders, the weight of the world on his shoulders. That one has the weight of the world on his shoulders. That one. They always said that one. Can you play See the USA in a Chevrolet with Donna? What's her name? Diana? Donna Reed. I want to hear See the USA.
See
That's all.
USA in your Chevrolet. America is asking you to call.
That's when there still was a Chevrolet.
America's the greatest land of all.
And they made the, turn it off already. It's another time. You know, it's like Gillette, Friday Night Fights. Everything was different. It was a different world. So 2007 hasn't been too great for me. I wouldn't say horrible, okay? Horrible is death. Horrible is a family member dying. Horrible is a dog getting run over by your own car in the driveway. Horrible is the doctor tells you you have bowel cancer and 6 months to live. Horrible is an emergency room. So I'm not complaining, don't get me wrong. But I am in my own way. I am in my own way. You see the latest story out here? Bush comes up with a mortgage plan that will freeze certain subprime interest rates for 5 years. Now, on the face of it, you say, wow, how compassionate. A three-pronged solution to stem the flow of mortgage foreclosures. Now, let me ask you something. How many of these who are about to go into foreclosure are illegal aliens? Has anyone asked that question but me? Answer, no. The government, as you well know, was forcing banks to lend to people who were not only illegal aliens, but unqualified for a mortgage. And if they didn't lend, if the banks didn't lend the money to people who didn't qualify, they were going to be sued by various divisions of the U.S. government. Now they're about to go belly up, and who's going to bail them out? The very same government that said, you must lend money to them. Now who's going to pay for the bailout? You and I. You and I. Now what about stronger lending standards? Like when I was young and I wanted to get a mortgage, I couldn't afford one. They wouldn't give me one. Why? Because I couldn't qualify. Why couldn't I qualify? I didn't have sufficient income. Therefore, I couldn't buy a house. But you see, everything's changed in the new PC America. And so you have a socialist-light government that said to banks for years, you lend money to illegal aliens or we will sue you. In fact, you can't even ask the so-called citizenship status of a potential borrower or we'll sue you for racism. So the banks were over a barrel. They said, but. The government said, we'll give it to you in the you-know-what unless you lend it to the illegal alien and unless you lend it to people who don't qualify. So now we have a so-called subprime crisis, and no one's talking about it. So Michael Savage again asks the question it's a question no one is going to ask. How many of these people in a subprime mortgage crisis are illegal aliens? How many of these people are those that banks were forced to lend to? But it doesn't stop Bush in clip 31 from telling us we have to pay for it. Listen.
Some lenders made loans that borrowers did not understand, especially in the subprime sector.
Well, hold on. Some lenders made loans that borrowers didn't understand? Is the president fooling you? What's there not to understand? Now he's taking the side of the people who they were forced to lend money to. Could you do me a favor and explain to the audience through music why I said 2000 is a very bad year? And so in order to do that, you have to play three things for me in this order. You have to play Mel Allen, you have to play Johnny Philip Morris, and then you have to come back to me with a doo-wop song. Go ahead, see if you can do that.
Drive hits the deep right field. That ball is going, it is gone.
Come in, Berlin. Secret message. Come in, Berlin. Berlin, come in. Berlin, calling Berlin. This is a secret coded message to the right wing in America. It's dip, 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 dip. If you read the first letter of each word and reverse them with lemon juice, you'll see what I'm actually saying. Come in, Berlin. Berlin, come in. Crazy leftists. They actually beep. I say it. Turn this off. I don't go for this. I don't go for it. Now, the first mortgage that this family ever got was my father in 1954 or 5. He bought a house for $14,500 in Queens, New York. And the mortgage money, you had to put down, I think, 20 or 25% at the least in those days, right? So what did he have to put down, like $3,000? It was a lot of money in those days. And then he took out a mortgage, and then he paid off the house. He had to qualify for the mortgage, and if he couldn't qualify, they wouldn't have given it to him. and he paid off the house, and that was the end of it. In those days, my father wouldn't buy a car on time because he said that was cheating. Can you imagine the thoughts of those guys in those days? A mortgage you had to pay off because who had cash to pay a whole house off? Nobody. I mean, you got to be crazy not to pay a car off, you know?
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
So we spent an hour talking about Barack Hussein Obama, and I asked you a question. Why is it an irrelevant question? What is Hussein? Where did he get the name from? Why is it not right to ask the question? And I posed the question, what if John McCain's middle name was Jesus? What if it was John Jesus McCain? Do you suppose the liberals would be saying, what does that mean? Do you want to convert us all? Are you a fanatic Christian, Mr. McCain? Well, then it would become a question. With John Jesus McCain, they'd be asking the question. But is Barack Hussein Obama, how dare you ask that question? Well, so we're not going to talk about that anymore. We had a good time with that. We're now going to move on to beer, wine, guns, boats, cameras, stuff I never talk about because I'm so tired of the other stuff. I'm so tired of it that I'm going to do what is – you can't do this during an election season. You're supposed to only talk about, well, she's up, he's down. No, she's down, he's up. No, he's up, she's down, he's sideways. Okay, let the others do it. If that's all they want to do, let them enjoy it. I don't care what their ratings are. I can't do it. So let's go to the callers, okay? Chicago, Thomas, go ahead. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to talk about my boat. The first boat I had was a 1972 Chris-Craft with double Rolls-Royce engines, actually.
And wow. Rolls-Royce engines? That wasn't factory, was it?
No, it wasn't. It was actually a boat that I inherited from a wealthy side of my family. I really didn't even know what to do with the boat.
That is amazing. But do Rolls-Royce engines do well in a marine environment?
Honestly, Mike.
No, I would imagine so. They use them in the air. What am I asking? Of course they must do well anywhere.
Rolls-Royce engines is the most amazing boat. But at the time, it was a little bit over my head. It's a 38-foot boat. The maintenance, all of that stuff was just crazy. But when you said you wanted to talk about guns, I mean, there's the new SIG 9mm, single action, double action.
Okay. Oh, you've touched the raw nerve. I went and bought a SIG P-232. With a 380 cartridge. I can't use the gun. I don't like it. I don't like double action guns at all.
Yeah.
Don't like them. I'm going to return the gun. No, I'm going to try and trade it back. I've never fired it. I just don't like the gun. I have, and I've had it for 25 years. My favorite handgun is really basic. It's the Colt Combat Commander 45. That is a weapon that is. I don't think there's anything you can beat it. WOR, Bob. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
I have a Glock 19. I'm an NYU graduate. I went in there as a moderate, came out to the right of you. But
how did that? Wait, you must have majored in engineering, certainly not in sociology.
Well, I took a class in sociology, and it was filled with communist professors, and they're really brainwashing, young, innocent minds.
Well, that's why there are so many suicides at NYU. I'm sorry to say, why are they throwing themselves off buildings there? How can the kids take it?
I don't know if it's that or the tuition, Mike, but I want to talk about the reason why. I hear you like a Colt 45, and those are excellent firearms. But when it comes to home defense, you need a good flashlight, and I like a Glock 19.
Well, let's talk about it. Many people listening to this show are experts in guns, and many of them are not, and some are thinking about getting a handgun. there's something to be said for a semi-automatic handgun and something to be said for a revolver. Why is a revolver something people consider having by their nightstand as opposed to a semi-automatic? You could answer that very simply. Why?
Because a
revolver is a point and shoot gun. You don't have to pull back on the gun. You just pick it up and fire it. A semi-automatic, you're going to have to pull back unless you leave it charged, which I would never do with a round in the chamber. I would never leave a semi-automatic with a round in the chamber spring-loaded like that. I just wouldn't do it. But on the other hand, you know, a revolver is much more reliable in that regard. They're not going to jam on you generally. 5 shots, 6 shots max, as opposed to 14 shots, so that's a disadvantage. They say that the shotgun is still your best friend in a bedroom. Nice old shotgun, pump shotgun, best friend in the dark. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. Any topic is fair game. Guns, cars, cameras. You want to talk about cameras? Cameras have changed to such an extent that I don't know there's much to talk about. Everything's automatic today. I'm using a Nikon D70 that I bought about two, three years ago, whenever it came out. It's far more complicated than my little Sony, but the new gigabytes on the little tiny Sony are astounding. And on my website, michaelsavage.com, the pictures you're seeing so far are with the Nikon D70, but I have a whole panel of pictures coming up with my little Sony. I think it's a 9 gigabyte, small, it's the size of a credit card. I never saw a camera like this. But I still like the heft and feel of a big camera. Although, if you want to take a picture of a bum in San Francisco, I would suggest you get a smaller camera because you can get away with more. You don't have to, like, aim it, you know. You can sort of, like, hold it. That's the better one to use if you're taking anonymous pictures. The credit card size camera is better. So what would you like to talk about? We can go back to politics, Hussein Obama, if you'd like. I mean, that's fine. Again, I raise the question, why is it inappropriate to raise the issue of his middle name? If John McCain's middle name had been or were Jesus, John Jesus McCain, would his middle name be an issue? I think so. I think that the liberals would have a diarrhea fit. They would go insane.
Oh, your name is John Jesus McCain? Oh, does that mean you want to convert us? What? That's frightening.
It would become an issue, I'm sure of it, the way Mr. Romney's Mormonism became an issue to the radicals at the New York Times. So that's why it was, you know, it was such a question. Let's see. What else do we have? Obama. Could you get pictures of Obama off my website except for that one article? You know, he looks like Alfred E. Newman to me with the big ears. He's not a very good-looking guy. I mean, I told you 1,000 times it's not about the fact that he's multiracial to me. I would vote for a black man in a second if he were a conservative. I would. You have to just take me on my word. I'd vote for a black woman if she could save America. I don't care what their race is. I don't happen to like the man's communist policies, that's all. I don't happen to like the bag men that have associated with him in Chicago. I don't like the fact that he has a nasty wife who seems to have a distemper for America and thinks it's only good now that her husband's getting attention. There's a lot of things that I don't really like about the guy, if you don't mind. Now, I recognize that many of you think he walks on water and that he can cure arthritis if you just go to one of his rallies. I'm not one of those, you know. So let's talk about boats for another minute or two. Tim, Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. I was wondering, have you ever touched on power cats? Because I know that they're really hot in Australia, and you can get, you know, you got a shallow draft, 4-foot draft on a 65-footer, and you can use a couple 700-horsepower Cummins. And
what is that? Oh, a catamaran?
Power cats, yeah. They're really popular in Australia.
You know, it's funny you should ask. When I lived years ago in the tropics, catamarans were very popular amongst the sailing folks. There was something about it that was not traditional that I couldn't relate to, the double hull. I know they sailed flat and people loved them. I just never related to them. To me, a boat has to have a single hull to be a boat. I can't relate to it. There's certain things that don't compute in my head. One of them is a double-hulled vessel.
Oh, yeah. I was wondering, what size is your Grand Banks?
It's a Europa 42.
Those are beautiful. Yeah, my dream is to have a custom-built yacht by Delta Marine or Delta Outdoor.
Oh, yeah, they're magnificent, gigantic, though. Well, you're talking about a 150-foot boat, though.
Well, yeah, well, they'll do a custom order. You can get a, like a nice 65-footer with an ice-strengthened steel hull. That way you can go up into Alaska, have a four-stateroom layout.
Wow.
Just take friends. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, I don't know if I could take that much time on a boat anymore. I mean, I'm a day boater. Truthfully, Tim, I'm not an overnighter. I'd rather come back to my house, and that's about it. I'm a day boater right now. There may be a time later on which I'll do overnights on a boat, but not right now. Thank you for the call. I have one quick call to take, then I'll go to a break. It's splinter advice from Jeff in Houston, Texas. Jeff, go ahead, please. Give me splinter advice.
Yes, I was going to tell you, I worked in a wood shop, and what you need to do is take your one-sided razor blade that has a handle on one side, like the box cutter.
And cut my throat.
No, you slowly, where the splinter is, you shave the skin real slow. It might take you about 20 minutes, but just lightly use the sharp edge of the blade and keep revving over it and revving over it and revving over it, and you'll be taking little bitty pieces of skin off. You won't even notice it, but you'll see the little, it's like sawdust. And eventually, when you keep going over it and over it, your blade will hit the splinter. And you could just keep doing that and go under it and kind of pull up, and then you can pull it out with your finger. I used to work at a wood shop, and I did it all the time.
Well, I see a little black piece of the splinter poking its head out. As you were talking to me, I was playing with my thumbnail, and it came out. So thanks for reminding me to remove it. Thank you. I'll be right back.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Now, look, I told you I can't just do this 3 hours a day. You'll go crazy and so will I. So I'm going to leaven this with Michael Savage radio stories, which you can find in the Savage Autobiography, and you can buy it at michaelsavage.com only. It is not in the stores. It probably won't be in the stores this year, if ever. It's only for you. And I'm going to press with it next Tuesday. I have to find the number that I need to print. I still don't know. So, honest to God, you're not going to get it till late October, early November, which is for the holidays. I know it's crazy. Labor Day, and already you're thinking ahead. It's the way people get when they get older. You start thinking ahead. You better think ahead. Now, listen to this story because it comes from my book. 5 o'clock, like clockwork, after a hard day in high school, my mother, God bless her, would put a tray out for me. Oh, was I spoiled. I'm making up for it now. I'm working my butt off. But the tray, the steak, the French fries. I'm talking French fries. Steak, French fries. Here's the diet I had, the healthful diet. Breakfast was ham and eggs with a jelly donut. Lunch was something light like a meatloaf sandwich with French fries. Dinner was something light like either steak or pot roast with some heavy potato dish, topped off with the health-enhancing cherry vanilla ice cream and a piece of pie. And maybe a glass of milk to go with it, and possibly a... This went on for years. Now, if I were designing an experiment to kill a child, now I'm not suggesting that that's what was going on here. If I were to design an experiment, a cardiotoxic diet to kill a pig in a laboratory, I'd give him that diet for like three months. The pig would roll over and drop dead of an occlusion. I don't know. I'm still kicking. So it has something to do with nothing to do with. You know, something to do with nothing to do with it. Now, admittedly, because my father, may rest in peace, died of a heart attack young, and my grandfather, then I was like reaching. Well, what about great-grandfather back in the old country? I was hanging on the hope that he lived to 103. Oh, he too died at 39. Oh, thank you. Three generations dead. I'm the oldest living savage in the history of the family. So every day is like a miracle. Well, that's why I went into nutrition. That's why I searched for the secret to longevity for years in the jungles of the South Seas. Go on my website, see if I'm making it up. I'm one of the original ethnobotanists in the field. And what I discovered is very, very little is known. But what is known is very important. Which vitamins you take and in what proportions.
All right, you get the picture.
The vitamin part I left out. The story part was funny. So that's in Psychological Nudity, and I rewrote it for the. It's still funny. I laughed at it because I still don't know how it worked. All I know is that when Dad came home, I could to this day remember, God rest his soul, and I'm not trying to mock my parents. God bless them both. They were wonderful people. I really mean it. What a struggle it must have been to be a new immigrant to America, and how confusing it was. New language, no education. That's why I empathize with the immigrants in America. And I, you know, you don't believe it. Here's a man for against illegal immigration. You think I'm a mean guy, but I look at them and I see me. I see their kids. I see myself. I see the guy playing soccer in the field. You know, in a different language, a different skin color. It's my father. I mean, I understand this. People don't comprehend this about me. But that's okay. You know, there's a lot of confusion in the world. I don't expect you to know me. That doesn't mean we should let them become citizens because they're nice guys and they want to get ahead. The country is full. The lifeboat is full. The water is coming over the gun walls. We don't have the social net for our own people. The hospitals are broken. The schools are broken. The roads are broken. The legal system is broken. The government is broken. We have no more room. Sorry, please go home. That's different than what they're trying to say we're saying about the illegal immigrants. Don't you understand? So it must have been hard for Dad. I mean, you know, you know how hard it was for him? He had nothing. He started out with a push cart in New York. I'm not ashamed to say it. A push cart. He told me that he drove a horse-drawn wagon when he was 13 to make some money. I don't know what it is. A laundry wagon. And here's this little kid, you know, with a big horse pulling a laundry wagon on the cobblestone streets. It sounds like 1,000 years ago. And he said he braked the horse, and the horse bucked, and he fell forward, and a spike went through his foot. Amazing. You know, you talk about it, it sounds like another universe, another world. Well, he had to work his way up from the streets to owning a little store. And then he owned a little store, and he was able to buy a little brick-attached house for $14,500 in 1952. And that remained the shelter for my mother long after my father went to the next world. And then she sold it and moved to Florida. But that little brick house was our fortress. It was a golden palace to me. I didn't want for more. I looked at nicer houses. They looked nice to me. But what's the difference what walls you live behind? I knew that as a youngster. As long as you have a roof over your head, and you have parents who love you, and you have food, and you have relatives who come over, how can it be any better than that? It can't be. How many broken hearts are there in mansions in Beverly Hills? How many empty, I have a choice word I'd like to use, cougars are there out there who live in huge houses in Nassau County hunting for the next lover who's 20 years old? You're telling me that woman is happy, the cougar with the injected lips? I don't think so. So, you know, you've heard all of these things before. They're all homilies. But the fact of the matter is they're not homilies. They're realities. And whether you like the story or not is entirely up to your orientation. If you are a God-fearing person who believes in family and patriotism in America, you'll love my book.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Shiites burned six Sunni worshippers alive. I said to myself, this is a religion? This is a religion. They blow up each other's mosques. If one of our men should accidentally, scratch a hangnail against the mosque, Wolfie Blitzer on CNN said,
"Ooh, American soldiers scratched the mosque's wall. We're going to have diversity training. An American corporal scratched the wall of a mosque. It's a sacred shrine."
But the Sunnis blew up Shiite mosques. So the peace-loving Shiites grabbed six Sunnis as they left Friday worship, doused them with kerosene, and burned them alive near an Iraqi army post. The soldiers did nothing. This is a day after there were 215 people slaughtered in the Shiite Sadr slum city. It's unbelievable to me. I never saw anything like this. Now you say, if they would do that to each other, what would they do to you? The answer is worse. That's number one. But there's actually a silver lining to this horrible story. And don't misquote me. I know the libs will because they're mentally ill and they're the most hateful people on the planet. the terrible story here is that mankind would do this to each other. And mind you, this is Muslim to Muslim. Shiites set six Sunni worshippers alive outside a house of worship. You hear me? This is a religion of peace. This is what they teach each other inside those mosques. It's unbelievable. So the only good note here, the only silver lining is that if the Shiites will burn Sunnis alive and the Sunnis will blow up Shiites, what does that tell you about them? It tells you that they'll never unify. It tells you that there will never be unity in the Muslim world. That's a very important thing for you to understand. There will never, ever be unity in the Muslim world. Never. If they're willing to blow each other up and set each other on fire, how are they ever going to get their heads together to kill all the Christians? Now, if you actually study the difference between Shia and Sunni, you'll find out how much more insane it becomes. They're still arguing over something that occurred several hundred years ago, and no one even remembers what it is anymore. But it's all about political power. It's sort of like the Democrats and the Republicans, the Shia and the Sunnis, without the with violence attached to it. Although the Democrats and Republicans simply care only about their own power, thank God they don't kill each other yet to gain that power. While the Shia and Sunni Muslims will kill each other over power sharing, it's all over some religious occurrence from several hundred years ago, as I said. And I'm not going to go into it because I'm really not that much more interested in Sunni versus Shia. But I know enough to tell you that if a religion teaches you to set the other man on fire as he comes out of his house of worship and he's a Muslim, why are we permitting any more mosques to be built in America? I am sorry that I have to ask that question. I know it's offensive to many of you foolish liberals who don't even understand the danger you are in. But here you have Holland, the most tolerant, multicultural nation the world had ever seen. That is until a peace-loving Muslim stabbed Theo van Gogh's grandnephew in the chest after hunting him down and slit his throat and shot him in the head, and then attached a note saying, "He is a symbol of Holland. We will kill all of you and drive you out of your own country." What happened as a result of that is a right-wing party led by students in Holland has arisen. They now have 20%. That's one out of five seats. They are passing laws such as burqas are not allowed in the streets of Holland, number one. Number two, speak Dutch in the streets of Holland or you'll be fined and thrown out of the country. You hear this? Number three, they're going to ban the construction of any more mosques in Holland. Now you say, well, that's not possible in America. Why shouldn't it be possible? Tell me why it shouldn't be possible in America. Do you want this nation to be further de-Christianized? Do you want this nation to disappear entirely? Do you want it uncoupled from its roots? Well, fine if you do, but you better figure out what you're going to have in place of the Christian nation that you hate so much, you atheistic liberals. If you want Shia setting Sunnis on fire, Sunnis setting Shia on fire, et cetera, and so on, well, go ahead and continue to kick down Western civilization because that's what awaits you. That is my postcard to you, the liberal, the insane, mad liberal who is threatening to destroy this country. Now, I want to make another note at this juncture. I have noticed that the tempo and frequency of hate mail about me is increasing on the internet. I have noticed for some reason that some of the even supposedly larger blogs are starting to publish long hate missives about Michael Savage, which is, in my mind, a good sign. It means they're coming to understand the threat I pose to them. But there's another reason that the hate is becoming more shrill, the hatred towards me. And that is because they are very offended that I said liberalism is a mental disorder. And the reason I said it is because it's obvious. The only explanation for people who would do these suicidal things is that they're mentally insane. So one of these unknown bloggers who was jealous of my success says that I'm crazy, you know, borrowing my book and trying to mirror it back at me. And what evidence does he use that I'm insane? He says that I am insane because, and he gives a list of things that allegedly I had done 30 or 40 years ago. I smoked pot. I hung out with beatnik poets. I did this and I did that. So he says, because I no longer smoke pot and I no longer hang around with beatnik poets, I'm allegedly insane. What he doesn't understand is that he is saying he is insane. because he can't grow. He can't develop. I have grown and I have developed, as have tens of millions of other Americans who did many things when they were young and then grew up to understand how self-destructive and how societally destructive these particular endeavors or actions were. That is how life usually progresses. People change as they grow older, as they become wiser. Now, when you have older people in their 40s and 50s who are still behaving as though they are in college, and some of them are quite affluent, that is by all definition the mark of a warped personality, a person who cannot change, who cannot understand that the rhetoric of his youth somehow rings hollow when he is 50 years old, or the behavior of his youth somehow rings insane when he is still conducting himself in that manner when he is 50 years old. And so I would pose the opposite, that a man who did X when he was 20 or 30 and now conducts himself on the path of Y when he is 50 or more is a wise man who has grown and seen the error of his ways, while the man who cannot change is a warped personality, or worse yet, an insane personality. That is Dr. Savage's diagnosis of why America must fight with all it has against the red diaper doper baby, first ridiculing them as they appear in the media, ridiculing them as I do every day, whether they be media, whether they be political figures, whoever they may be, as I've done in the political zoo. And I'm not here to sell you a book. I am telling you that the red diaper doper baby, who may be a multimillionaire and still conducts himself as though he's this college student at Columbia or NYU, with the rhetoric of the Spanish Civil War, amalgamated with the rhetoric of the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, amalgamated with some of the dialectics of communism, is a man who has not developed. He has not grown. Now, when you look at the radical Islamist and what that radical Islamist not only says he is going to do, but is in fact doing, and these idiots continue to act as though their biggest enemy is the man who would want to control their behavior, they are insane, and they're going to kill us all unless we get control of them.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
We're going to talk about a tragedy that has occurred in San Francisco that has ramifications for the world. And that is the indiscriminate killing of a father, Mr. Bologna, and his two grown sons by an illegal alien felon who should have been arrested and deported months before, but for the policies of Mayor Annie Tuesome Newsom and District Attorney Kamala Harris, who protected this felon, this gang member, who has now committed three murders. Joining us right now is Danielle Bologna. I need not tell you who she is. She'll tell you who she is. Mrs. Bologna, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you very much for having me on this show.
First of all, I want to start with the obvious, which is that my heart goes out to you. I don't know what to say other than that. I don't want to overdo this. But you are a woman right now who has lost about everything. I'd like to know, without pumping you to say anything you don't want to say, what kind of reaction have you gotten from the city, from the people in this city itself?
Well, first, I just want to say to most of the listeners who are listening right now is I got a reaction of anger. We were pretty well known in San Francisco. We kind of dedicated ourselves to doing a lot of coaching, and we were a very active family, very close family. The funeral itself can tell you there was 1,800 people that attended, a lot of family members and, you know, friends and so forth. And the city of San Francisco right now is opening up their eyes to something they weren't aware of, which is called the sanctuary law. You know, we all tend to have our eyes closed, but when it happens to somebody that you love and somebody close to you, you tend to say, what's going on here? You know, and with all my friends and everybody in San Francisco, they're just extremely stunned. It's changed their life. I've had many people say to me, I need to be closer to my kids, closer to my husband. And I'm a woman, which I can't even say widow, because that's indescribable to me. I never in a million years thought I would be in this situation. I lost a beautiful man that I love of 21 years, my son, who is 20 years old, and my other son, who is 16, who I had to take off life support. I never thought I would have to do something like that. And I think the city right now is extremely outraged and angry. I
ran a picture on my website, Danielle, of Mayor Newsom having a party with Kamala Harris in Denver, celebrating their wonderful politics, partying as though everything's just fine back home. I was outraged by this. These are the people who permitted this gangbanger to walk the streets and kill your family.
Exactly. And
what has Mayor Newsom's reaction been with regard to this tragedy?
You know, this is what's disgusting to me, and all your viewers are listening to this. It's so disgusting. I am a citizen of San Francisco, and I'm a Catholic, and we've done everything right. I would have thought from Gavin Newsom, who 2 months later after this murder then decides to say he's sorry on TV instead of even speaking to us personally. Now I could care less. I don't even want to look at him. I don't want nothing from him.
Saying he never visited you personally?
Ever. And he had the nerve to come to the funeral for 5 minutes and not even come up to me or the archbishop. And I was stunned. I just looked
at him. He's a nothing. He's an empty suit. He's one of the worst people in the history of this city.
Thinks he's and, running for governor? There's no way.
Governor, yeah. On what basis should he run for the governor? On releasing gangbangers to kill? Look, you've hurt so much. I don't want to make it any worse, but you are suing the city. What needs to happen for the people to understand what you're trying to do?
Mainly what I'm trying to do is I really want to set a point. I really want to change this law. I feel like I'm not going to be the only family ever to go through this. I don't want it to happen to another family.
Now, what do you mean by change the law? You mean the sanctuary city policy that permits illegal alien gangbanger drug dealers to roam freely under the protective wing of the district attorney and the mayor?
Absolutely. At this point, we really want to hold them accountable to this. I think change needs to be in San Francisco. I think the people in San Francisco need to open their eyes and see what's going on. Because, you know, for me, it's like when I think about this lawsuit, it's not even – this is the principle. You know, this is my family, and I'm dealing with three empty lives in my life. And
No amount of money on earth could ever replace it. No, it wouldn't matter if you won $100 million. It wouldn't matter. I understand that. And what's keeping you going is trying to get justice here. I understand that as well, Danielle.
Exactly. But I do want to say this, too, is we have not even heard from our governor. And I understand that he's busy with the budget. But, my God, he has not even paid attention to the city of San Francisco. Where's he been through all of this? If I was governor.
He's another empty suit. Schwarzenegger's another fraud. He's a melting ice cream cone. Look, don't expect anything from politics, from politicians, Danielle. I learned that if you read the Bible, they'll tell you never expect anything from politicians. What you can expect is something from the people. And I represent the people not only in San Francisco but across America, and they know what heartbreak you are feeling right now. Danielle, is there any way people can contribute to your legal defense fund? Do you have an address they can mail any money to?
I do.
Because
if
you do, I'll put it right on the air. I'll put it on my website. But before you do it, Danielle, I am going to donate $5,000 right now from the Michael Savage Legal Defense Fund to your defense, your lawsuit against the city, whatever you want to do with it. God bless you. I don't know. No amount of money on earth could ever make up for what happened to you. But how can the people listening to this show help you directly, Danielle?
Oh, God. First, I just want to say thank you so much. And we have a fundraiser for the family for the two kids, my son and my daughter.
I'll tell you what, Danielle, leave it with my people. I will read it on the air. I will put it on my website. I have no other words to say than I have already said. You have made an impression that needs no further embroidery. People heard you. Okay. They know what happened to you. Here's a woman who lost a husband and two beautiful sons, law-abiding, and that piece of empty garbage that any Twosome Newsome never even came and said, I'm sorry. That wants to be governor. That thing thinks it could be president. That tells you everything you need to know about the Democrats.
That's right. You're absolutely correct.
Now, Danielle, before you go, I have to raise a very sensitive issue. And that is the issue of ethnicity, and I'll tell you why. Because the first thing you're going to hear is that I'm a racist and I'm anti-Latino and I'm just trying to bash Latinos who are simply coming in for sanctuary. When I know for a fact that you are you're a Latina, is that correct?
I'm Mexican in Nicaragua, yes.
All right, well, let the people understand that it's not about ethnicity, it's about legality.
Exactly.
It's about legality. You just, I have a lot of other things I could say, Danielle, and I'm not going to do it. I feel very bad right now. And frankly, I think I should let you go because there's things I'm going to say I'm going to regret saying in 2 minutes. I want to reiterate that I'm giving you in some small ways only a token of what I'd like to be able to do. And I hope that the people listening, we will get the address. We'll help you financially to seek the justice that will never bring back what is missing from your life.
But
just know that not all of the people out there are on drugs and heartless, soulless monsters like Gavin Newsom.
That's correct.
Thank you very much. Many of you want to know how you can help Mrs. Bologna. I gave her $5,000. We're sending her $5,000 from the Savage Legal Defense Fund. Bologna Family, B-O-L-O-G-N-A, Bologna Family, Washington Mutual, that's a bank, 845 Laurel Street, San Carlos, California, 94070. Bologna Family, Washington Mutual, 845 Laurel Street, San Carlos, California, 94070. I'm not here to raise money for her. I'm not here to tell you to do what you don't want to do or what to do, but I'm heartbroken for this city of mine that I love so much to see such evil in the streets of this city as supported by this local rag, this filthy, useless newspaper. I'm glad it's losing $1 million a day, and one of these days the hearse will wake up and close it down altogether. There's a reason it's losing $1 million a day. Who would read a newspaper that takes a story like this about Mrs. Bologna and sweeps it under the rug as fast as they can? Who would read a newspaper that covers up for Bernie Ward, a man who traded in child pornography with girls as young as 2 years of age, showing them in full sexual contact with adult males and not even have commentary permitted on the article about Bernie Ward? But when I, Michael Savage, made one statement, they ran it for 10 straight days as though I am Jesse James and these evil, evil murderers are the good guys to them. But don't worry about it. I'm surviving and I'm thriving and they're not. And the reason is because you, the listener, knows the difference between one thing and another. And that's why they're going out of business, and that's why my business has never been better. But it's no longer about me. It's never really been about me. If it was about me, I wouldn't be here. It's about you, and it's about you having a voice through me. And when that woman was on this show and she was breaking down and crying, I had a fight with my own emotions because so many emotions were surging through me. What man can listen to a grieving widow?
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage.